Here he comes.
Good morning, everybody. Please take your seats. We are about to start.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you for attending. I know everybody is dying to spend more time talking about GDPR this morning, and this is your opportunity because we cannot deny you a good time here at ICANN. The purpose of this meeting this morning, the session this morning, is largely to go through the interim model for GDPR compliance that's set out in the cookbook and the areas of contentions and open questions to give you a sense of what ICANN has, not a sense, something of a deep dive on what ICANN has presented both to the community and to the data protection authorities and what will be discussed in the coming weeks. We're going to turn to John Jeffrey to go through that in detail. Following John's presentation, and I'm sure there's a moment for Joran to share his thoughts as well, we'll take questions. We're using the numbered microphone question so that if you have a question, you can go stand by one of the wonderful ICANN.org folks holding up a card, and I will recognize you based on the microphones. If you are remotely participating, we are following a different protocol here. There is an email address. You may send your questions in via email, and we will take those as part of the process here. So, Joran, would you like to say good morning? My job is to moderate, Joran.
That's easy. Was that a trick question, by the way?
Yes.
Before we start, I would like to read a message because I want to make sure that everybody knows this. Yesterday, we were notified by a member of the Security and Stability Advisory Committee of what appears to be a potentially serious security issue affecting our use of Adobe Connect. We made a decision in order to protect the members of the multi-stakeholder community, and out of abundance of cautions, we have suspended our Adobe Connect services. Shortly after receiving this information, and a special thanks to ESSEC, we mobilized a cross-functional team to begin an investigation in this matter. Concurrently, our team worked late into the night, or I would actually say into the morning, and still working, to identify alternative solutions to restore alternative functionality for remote participation in ICANN 61. We will continue to have live stream video, multilingual audio, and live scribe feeds in the main meeting rooms. Other rooms will be limited to listen-only audio bridges. Questions and comments from remote participants will also accommodate via email as best as we can. We will continue to investigate the issue and provide an update as once we have more information. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Joran. And John, take it away.
Great. So just to make sure everybody's level set on this, so we have a model, an interim model for GDPR compliance, which is currently published on the ICANN website. We're calling that the Calzone model. And the reason we're calling that is a long story. But the Calzone model contains a number of different elements that have been mapped across the various GDPR issues that have been collected from community dialogue starting last fall. The model in particular will roll through the different elements of it, but it is essentially a collection of the various elements of inputs from the community, and it is related to the various models that have been presented from different aspects of the community. So we'll just roll through the model very quickly. Most of you who've been watching this have seen this before, so I apologize for being redundant, but I want to make sure we have the level set. So we'll go quickly through this, and then we'll try to get to questions as fast as we can. So first, there are four basic layers or issues, sets of across the different model. The first is data collection, processing, and retention. The second is applicability, who it applies to. Then it's what will appear in the public who is as the model is rolled out, and what would appear behind a non-public who is. So what would no longer be accessible publicly, and how would accredited parties be able to access that? And just to sort of show you the scale and the scope of the different models that have been submitted to ICANN, we tried to grid those just to sort of show you a different element. If you look at the top line, that says changes applied globally as opposed to changes applied to the European Economic Area from left to right. And if you go from the bottom to the top on the other axis, it's due process, meaning you come in with a court order, and full public access, where we are with the current who is. So that's where the different models sort of fit into that grid. And that is also on the ICANN website, and you can see sort of where we've assessed the different models that have been submitted to fit, and we realize that may not be completely accurate depending on how others look at how they submitted their model and what it says. So I'll go back to the original slide, and we'll just walk through these different elements of the proposed interim model or the Calzone model. So on data collection, processing, and retention, what data will continue to be collected under the new model? So when registrants go to their registrar and they register a domain name, what will be collected? The full thick set of data will still be collected. We carefully looked at all of the different elements that are under the full thick data, tried to determine if there were those that were underutilized or there was no purpose that was stated in comments or other places. We came up with some initially, some fields that we thought weren't being utilized or might not have a legitimate use. But after additional discussions with the community, we realized this whole set of data is used by various parties for all sorts of different purposes. With that in mind, our proposal at this time in this interim model is to continue to collect the full thick data. And we think that that's still a question which we expect questions about, and we expect to be in discussions with the DPAs about shortly. The next element is, once you've collected that data, where will that data be transferred to? There's two different places the data is typically transferred to under WHOIS. One is from registrars to registries, and the second is to ICANN contracted escrow agents. And of course, the purposes for registrar to registry transfer have been documented in the contracted parties discussions, in the discussions from other models and from submissions. The data transfer to the escrow agents is particularly important in the ICANN world, because that's one of the places where ICANN would actually use the data in the event that a registrar or a registry were to fail, or in the event that we were to bring a compliance action requiring that data be transferred in the event of a de-accreditation of a registrar or an end to a registry agreement. Last on this category, data collection, processing, retention, of course, is retention. So how long would the data be retained? And there were various approaches across the models on this. We selected life of registration plus 2 years, in particular, noting that there are some existing waivers for European registrars that would be preserved. And some of those are 1 year, some of those are 2 years in the discussions that had led up to GDPR and these other discussions from previous instances of communications with DPAs. On applicability, must the model be applied globally or only to the European Economic Area? This issue is really about where this law applies and who it applies to. Obviously, it's directed at European Economic Area, so it would apply to any registrant in the European Economic Area. There is a concern stated by the contracted parties and others. It'll be very difficult to determine in all instances where they're compliant with the law in only selecting European Economic Area, and whether it would create a fragmented who is in some way by having different treatments. And so we selected that it would apply to in either approach, depending on the contracted party's election. If the contracted party elected only to apply it in one way or the other, we would require that contracted party enter into a data processing agreement with ICANN so that they would be responsible for that election. What registrant types are affected? This has been a discussion in many of the rooms this week. Would it apply only to natural persons where the law is specifically directed, or would it apply to legal persons as well, meaning businesses and corporate entities? We believe also that this would require to be applied to both natural and legal persons because of the difficulty in many instances of differentiating them, both inside the name but also inside the processes of the registrars and registries. Let's see, we'll roll forward. One very important point that I should have started with is we started 8 months ago talking about whether there should be a layered or tiered access approach in the model, and we think now that almost all of the community is in agreement. It's something the DPAs have talked about for some times in the Article 29 letters. We are approaching this model, and most of the models that were submitted to ICANN approach it as a layered model. And what we mean by layered is that there will be a public portion of WHOIS, fields that you can see publicly the same way that you can now, but there will also be a non-public portion of WHOIS, so where there's PII information inside of WHOIS, that in many cases will now be behind the non-public WHOIS, and you could only access that if you have accreditation or if you've met the requirements to be able to access it. So when we look now at the public WHOIS, what will you see? And that's what these fields are. Registrant names in public WHOIS. You only see the registrant organization if that's applicable. You'll no longer see the registrant's name in that field. On registrant postal address, you'll no longer see the street, city, and postal code, but you will see state, province, or country in order to help you find the jurisdiction of that party. On registrant email, as well as on admin and tech email, we're proposing to create an anonymized email or web form so that you can contact the registrant or the admin or tech contact. But this is, of course, one of the points of divergence still in our community and is still being hotly discussed, as we'll probably hear from some of the questions coming up. On registrant phone and fax, on admin tech contact phone, on a number of other, I think that's most of the categories. Let's see. Yes, so on those categories, you'll no longer see that information in the public WHOIS. Going forward then, how will parties that need to access or have a legitimate purpose to access the non-public WHOIS be able to get there? One of the questions that came up in the community is a self-certification model, a way to do that. Is there some way that we could create a self-certification model, a test at the registrar level when the registration's taking place to be able to access that information? After carefully looking at this issue, we believe that that should not be an option. There should not be a self-certification process. We do realize that there is a need to contact the registrants, and we're hopeful that the solution of providing anonymized email addresses, if the email address is not published in the public WHOIS, would be a way to be able to do that. Then the last question, of which there's a lot of dialogue here and some models beginning to be put out into the community for this, there's what is the accreditation program? How will a party be able to access it? We think there has to be an accreditation program. There has to be some way for parties to be certified, to be permitted to see what's behind the non-public WHOIS. And we've started a consultation. We're seeking consultation with the GAC and with the DPAs in particular about how to gain access to that. If we're proposing that individual countries could provide to the GAC a list of authorized law enforcement and other governmental authorities or agencies to have access, where it's non-governmental, we're seeking input on how to create a code of conduct, a set of rules that would both provide for ways to become certified to obtain access and for rules on how you can utilize that information once you've obtained that certification. And with that, we'll pause. I don't know if anyone else wants to speak to some issues. Actually, I just want to show one more thing, come to think of it, because this is a really important thing that's come up in a number of different conversations this week. In the interim compliance model, there are a number of what we're calling divergent issues or competing views that are being addressed across the community. And this is the list of those, collection and transfer of administrative and technical contact details, the publication of email addresses, what the scope is. Remember I talked about global versus EEA. The types of registrations affected by the interim compliance model, an interim approach for continued access to full WHOIS data, and also we've added a sixth one that is not contained in the documents that we've submitted to the DPAs because of the dialogue this week, which is how some parties would be able to obtain continued access to bulk WHOIS data. And we can go to questions.
Okay, we're going to go quickly to questions. I will start with mic number two.
Maxim Alzoba, for the record. The question is, looking at the accreditation access model number 1.1, the question is, parties are subjects to penalties according to this model. Most parties, but not intellectual property. What was the reason to exclude them from potential penalties? Thank you.
Could you clarify what you're referring to when you say accreditation access model number 1.1?
It's a document called Accreditation Access Model for Non-Public WHOIS Data, dated of March 12.
Is that the IPCBC proposal? So I think we're going to take that question a little bit later in the process. Sorry. Let's start with the ICANN model first. Mic number one.
Thanks very much. This is Thomas Rickert representing ECO Internet Industry Association. And first of all, let me thank you for making the second session on GDPR possible. I think that's extremely helpful. And also thank you again for the huge progress that has been made with the Calzoni model. I have two questions on what John has just outlined. First question is regarding the ideas surrounding layered access. Is the plan to grant each and every party that would be accredited full access to all data, or does ICANN plan to have a more nuanced approach so that we actually have something which could be called layered access, whereby those who are accredited only get access to certain subsets of all the data that is not publicized? The second question is relating to data protection impact assessments. As you may or may not know, the Article 29 group has issued guidance on when data protection impact assessments are required, and they have publicized a catalog of 9 criteria, 2 of which I think are fulfilled when it comes to publicizing WHOIS data. That is mass processing of data plus non-EU transfers. Typically, those data protection impact assessments need to be carried out prior to starting the processing activity. So I think it would be high time to at least consider preparing for a DPIP. And my question to you, John or Joran, is whether ICANN has started putting some thought into that. Thanks very much for answering.
So on the second question, we're carefully looking at that. We've been engaged with our own counsel about that. We know that some of the registries and registrars have looked at doing their own approach to that impact assessment. It's something we're carefully considering, and thank you for the question. I think we don't want to go too deep into that particular type of area at this point, but as you can see both from the Hamilton memo and other dialogue that we've had, this is a consideration we've been taking all along about the appropriate time to do that and whether or not it's applicable in this instance.
And Thomas, thank you for your question and thank you for your compliments. On the first one, I mean, this is one of the areas that there are different opinions within the community. And one of the this is going to get an answer. This is an answer you're going to get many times during today, because this is our approach to it. When there are different opinions within the community, even if we have an opinion through the model, what we're going to do is to point that to the DPAs in the dialogue and ask them that question, because it's a hard question. We have proposed something. There are other proposals. So the answer is, Thomas, in our model, we proposed full access after you sort of come into the pizza, but As this is a question that has been discussed, we're going to take that to the DPAs. Thank you.
Okay, we're going to go to 4, then 5, back to 2, and then 1.
Good luck following that. Good morning, Jim Prendergast. JJ, in the cookbook, you refer to contracted parties as independent controllers, I believe is the term, something that's contradictory to the Hamilton memos and other models. Can you share with us the legal analysis that you used to get to that?
I won't be an expert on breaking down the independent controller versus co-controller versus joint controller issue. I will tell you it's something that we've looked at very carefully. As you're aware, the Hamilton memo was an independent counsel memo. Not every element of it we agree to in the same way, and this has been a discussion point along the way. ICANN has a very limited use of this data, and there's been some confusion of it, and so I think even though this is a very educated crowd on what WHO is, it's worth going through that a little bit. So there is no central database. This doesn't all come to ICANN, and we offer a WHO is. And really and truly, in the discussions we've had with DPAs, that was a first barrier to come through, really explaining that there's not a central ICANN WHO is database where all of this is collected. And as all of you know, WHO is a very distributed model. It's collected by each registration point by the registrars. It's transferred across to the registries. And so there's a whole group of different controllers that have different potential uses of that data. For ICANN, we use it for auditing information. We use it for the escrow and the transfer and authorizing transfer of escrow under certain limited conditions, and a handful of other very minor uses. But we don't use it for marketing purposes. We don't offer it and sell it. We don't package it into products. We don't do anything else with it. We can't, as ICANN, we don't have controls over how that information is utilized by each registrar or registry. And so in some ways, we have to differentiate the controller role of ICANN to those limited uses where it's proposed for and purposed in the contract, as opposed to all of the possible uses. So that's the underlying piece of the controller argument. Without getting into the specific legal nature of it, I'd have to provide you with a memo, which is much longer to get into that.
Could I just real quick? So, it was an internal analysis that led you to that determination, and not an external?
Well, it's based on. There's a lot of documents out about GDPR now, and you can find a number of different detailed analysis points, both publicly as well as information that we've requested from our own counsel and our view of the Hamilton memo and where we might differentiate with some of the points on it.
When you say your counsel, is that Hamilton or somebody else?
As you're well aware, we have a number of lawyers inside ICANN that have been, for lack of a better word, forced to become versed in the GDPR and some European legal issues relating to this. And we also have outside counsel in Europe that has been helping us with this.
5, then 2, then 1.
This is Lindsay Hamilton-Reed from 1&1. Two questions. In regard to the process of data minimization, how did you come to the conclusion that all that data still needs to be collected? And also in regard to data retention, again, how did you agree that it was going to be 2 years, or even with a waiver, 1 year, when you can only keep that data for as long as necessary? Thank you.
Thank you. I will take the first part of it. When we look at this from ICANN.org and the role I have, we have two rule sets. One of the rule sets is, of course, being compliant with the laws itself. The other rule set is, of course, the policies already set by the community, which turns out in the contracts we're having with the contracted parties. And I don't think, or we decided, and I don't think that we should stay as close as possible to the policies set by the community until the community changes its policies. So what we are actually trying to do is to find a middle ground between what the law says and what the policy sets, to be as close as we can, in our opinion, to what is set by the community. I know that in this room there are different opinions about how well we've defined that job. There will be someone who says that we're over-compliant, and also someone who thinks that we're under-compliant. And that's why we try to do this as open and transparent as possible by providing you as much as possible of the information. But in the end, which I think I'm going to say, I said it a couple of times over the last couple of days, in the end, it's in the hands of the DPAs to help us with that definition as well. Thank you.
Okay, I apologize.
Actually, I want to finish that too. I think it's really important because we've had a number of questions this week, and we want to clarify a couple things on the cookbook, which we realize is very difficult to process coming into a meeting, but it was published on Friday, and it wasn't published just for discussion here. It was published because of deadlines that the DPAs had provided to us about being able to review the model. If you go to Attachment 1 and Attachment 2, which starts on page 42, there's a legal basis for processing of the GTLD registration data elements and then a legal basis for data retention requirements. And it's there that we're trying to provide the first level of detail about why those elements are being collected and why they're being retained. And so completely understand there's some complaints that's not detailed enough, but this is our initial take at this, and we're interested and open to more discussion about any of those individual elements. But I do want to point that out because I think it's been a big topic this week. There's been a lot of statements, so there's no justification provided for how we would do that, and I would implore you to look at the cookbook and in particular look at those attachments. Thanks.
Three and then two.
Hi, I'm Jeff Chan from Cerbal, a security researcher. As a security researcher who uses Whois data for finding bad guys, I would like to say that the reduction in transparency that the interim model represents would probably result in more people being phished, more people being infected. We are concerned that there would be an increase in crime due to this reduction in transparency. I'd like to ask how security researchers can get involved in the certification process that's going on for non-law enforcement. Thank you.
One of the things that we have said is also that we are affected by our internal work is affected as well. Our Okto team was developing the DAR project, for instance, because of the we don't have a database. ICANN.org in our work within compliance and what we're doing there is actually going to be affected the same way as you do. And we often work with people like you and other ones in good cooperation. There's much to be said about this. But we should have said it when the law was discussed. Now we're trying to deal with it from a legal perspective. In the proposal we made, and again, I want to say it's a proposal about accreditation and accreditation model, we pointed out in the documentation that it is important for, if you had a legitimate reason for getting access to data, we try to find a format to doing that. But because you can discuss certain details, but you can also discuss the principles. There are several worst-case scenarios, or good-case scenarios, depending on which part of the room you sit in. And we should forget the current who is. Think about it as a stretch, that the only way to get access to data would be through due process. So that's one alternative. We have seen it as a... because of the need for information... there is a good purpose for having information. We've been trying to do a model which makes it possible for other users to get access to the information for the reasons you say. But in the end, we don't know the answer to that question yet, and therefore we're always pleading, for instance, to the European Member States and their representatives in the DPAs to take that into account when they look into the accreditation model. Thank you.
And just to add to that, I think there was part of the question was how can I participate, how can I put the information from my community into the accreditation model discussion. So I don't have it at my fingertips, but there's an address where you can submit comments still. And of course, the accreditation model dialogue is going to become a key focus of this as we move through the next phase. And we're starting to see already today we have a proposal on how to approach accreditation. We'll be seeking consultation with all of the elements of the community that are participating in this discussion as we go through that process.
Okay, we're going to go to one. I'd like to take the next two people in line that I'm seeing over there on one. Could you please state your name when you start talking? And I'm going to be controversial and say, let's take as accepted the fact that there are enormously important uses of WHOIS data. Let's try to get into concretes and specifics here.
Thank you. This is Susan Kalgoogee, and I'm part of the BC. To answer the gentleman's question, there is a proposed accreditation and access model for non-public WHOIS, and I do have some talking points on that if you want to get into that now. This model was delivered to Gorin last night. Okay, so I'll try to be quick, but many community members came together and developed the model, and so we've decided that we're going to name this model Cannoli model because it pairs well with the calzone. So just real brief, what's at risk? Swift mitigation of security threats, increases in user confusion resulting in financial and other losses, criminal activity, which range from human trafficking to money laundering, and everything in between. This model relies on some of the principles and examples from the EWG Expert Working Group report and proposes to change no changes to the architecture of the current WHOIS system. This is an interim model. This is not a fully fleshed out access model, but it could be implemented with minimal coding and changes. It's a federated model, and it's designed for the current system. With a certification authority to accredit users. My computer's gonna die here. Okay. The accreditation and access model for non-public WHOIS includes the types of eligible entities that may seek access to data, legitimate and lawful purposes for accessing data, how eligible entities may be accredited to access data, a proposed operating model, and terms of accreditation, so everyone would sign up for a terms of service. It doesn't include a detailed purpose statement that's still being drafted, technical implementation details, and doesn't specify a technical authentication model. A single sign-on or certificate model is possible. So what are the next steps? Creation of a functional spec is our first step. And we may need a commercial service to do so. So that requires money, and who's going to pay for this? Accreditation specifics, and we would rely on parts of the community for additional details. We focus mainly on cybersecurity and intellectual property, but all the full community should provide input. So we're assuming the CSG, the BC and IPC to define certification criteria for IP interests, and then we would look to ESSAC for the cybersecurity interests. This model doesn't really address LE because that is more of a GAC responsibility, but some parts of this model could be adapted for LE. And there's other stakeholders included, which could be academic research. So we do have this model. We've provided it to ICANN, and we would love to share it with the rest of the community for their input and to work collaboratively on it.
Thank you. This is exactly what we need to be able to continue. And I read through it, but I can't say I got it. I think it's a very good proposal. There are, and it's actually sort of an extension to what we talked before, a combination of what we did before. But this is, I congratulate you for the effort and the time you spent on it. Because of time right now, we are already published it. I think we already published it last night because we thought it was important to get it out. What I don't want to do is that we sort of... there are some fundamental questions we need to get answers from the DPAs, and hopefully we will get, because we continue the dialogue fairly fast with them. So what we're going to do is we're going to put this into a package and sort of combine them with what we have, and get some answers. And if the answers are positive, we will, of course, help with money. Did I actually say that? Yeah, I'm tired. But I think we all need to get some guidance from the DPAs before we sort of say that this is the right thing. But I think this is amazing. I also hope that if there are other sides of the room that needs to be talked with, I know you're going to do that in a typical multi-stakeholder Wednesday positive something. Is it already Wednesday? Oh, thank you very much.
Thank you. We're going to go to 2, then 4, then 5, then 3.
Thank you very much, Becky. Gregory Mounier from Europol and the Public Safety Working Group of the GAC. So as you know, the law enforcement community and the public safety community, we are very, very concerned about the period which will start on the 25th of May and the date of a potential implementation of an interim model. During that period, investigators around the world will lose access to one of their most basic and essential tools to investigate crime online. And by the way, a side comment, I really hope that the ICANN security team will find the perpetrators of the Adobe Connect security issue before the 25th of May, because otherwise, good luck. So my question is, once the community has identified a temporary GDPR-compliant model, because it will come at some point, would the board consider triggering the relevant provisions in the registry agreement and the registrar accreditation agreement pertaining to the temporary policy and special amendments of the registry and the registrar's contract to mandate the fast implementations of the interim model in order to reduce the period of time when the security and the safety of internet users will be in jeopardy? Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you for giving me the opportunity to have this conversation with you, because this is a very important statement which I think it's time to get across. If we don't have, ICANN doesn't have a normal contract. It's not a business contract. WHOIS doesn't exist in that sense for us as a business thing. That means that, and we are not a government. We have voluntary agreements which is based on policies from the multi-stakeholder model. That means that if we don't get clear guidance, and it's said in the transcript of Poland, I get it was Europol, I would challenge you, dear sir, to go back to your DPAs and the Article 29 group to make sure, and I, again, with great respect from the Article 29 group and the DPAs, to give us clear guidance. Because we don't have clear guidance, at the end of May, our ability to enforce the contract provisions we have will diminish. That will lead to a fragmented WHOIS. And I think it's very important to understand that basic fact. If we think that we can enforce things without knowing how the law is going to hit us, it makes our job very, very hard. Please accept that fundamental understanding. We are not a company. We are an institution to provide the domain name system. We are not doing this for commercial reasons. This is how it's set up. Thank you.
And just to add to Joran's comment, there was a second part of your question about how the new model, if there's an adopted one that has been, we've been provided clear advice on that it would be compliant with GDPR, how it could be enforced. And you correctly stated that there is a special provision in our contracts which would allow us to enforce that model under an emergency provision. And that could be renewed every 3 months for up to a year. So there is a way for us to cause enforcement through our contractual agreements, a fairly unique clause for a commercial agreement. And so it's very important, if we do have that guidance, we have the ability to cause compliance with that model with 1,000 registries and 1,000 registrars. And we hope that that's sufficient to help cause that sort of clarity and advice to come to us, to help us utilize the mechanisms inside of our contracts to be most effective.
So I realized I promised the second one, so we're going to go to 1, then 4, then 3, then 2.
Good morning. My name is Stephanie Perrin. I represent the Non-Commercial Stakeholders Group.
And I can assure you that even though my proposal kind of fills in on the business constituency's proposal, we have not been collaborating, although I'd like to issue an invitation on behalf of me and my stakeholder group to do that, to collaborate, because I think while we endorse the ISO standards approach for an accreditation model, and I invite anyone who's interested to come and talk to me, and I did hear an offer of money, I'm not getting Joran's attention on that, but if there's money going for a business model, we'd like money to be put in for a proper international standards model too, so thank you. The proposal that I had, actually, I've been worrying about the short-term problem in getting in the road of law enforcement access. And it strikes me that ICANN is a controller of the escrow data. And the current model recommends full, thick data transferred to the escrow. Now, I do understand, before Andrew Sullivan jumps up and tells me I don't understand how escrow data is formatted and held, I trust that that escrow data is not so easy to access. Nevertheless, the escrow agents, who are few in number and fewer than the registrars, could be authorized in the interim to provide access to legitimate law enforcement agencies for serious purposes on an expedited basis. And they could even do data analytics on it, hopefully anonymized. Those workarounds could be brought in so that we could build an accreditation system that had rigor and was not anti-competitive and had all of the things that we want in it. So I'm just offering that as a proposal. We have not written it up. If I can get my community to agree, which is kind of highly unlikely because this sounds like a single pot law enforcement regime, but I think it has some merit, and I'll put it in myself if they don't. Thank you.
So quickly, Stephanie, I think that your voice is a really important voice in our community. When you sat at the panel the other day, we heard some unique perspectives that we don't hear from other people. We read your comments very carefully, and it's part of how we try to bring some balance into some of these discussions. So I applaud you for your comments, and we want to make sure you understand your experience that you bring to this based on what you've done in your career, and what you bring to these discussions is very important to this discussion. And we do hope you'll participate in and bring forth accreditation approaches that can be balanced and put into the discussion. Thank you.
No. You don't get to say thank you.
I don't get to say thank you. I'm thanking you for the donation to the standards. That's what that sounded like. Thanks.
Okay. 4, 3, 2, 1.
We have a question online from Amy Pont. Will registrars need to go through the accreditation process in order to access full WHOIS?
I've not heard that question yet, so I'll defer it, and we'll come back with and provide an answer. I don't know.
Okay, 3.
Hi, my name is Colin Curry, and I apologize I missed the better part of this session because it was inconveniently scheduled at the same time as the Cross-Community Working Party on ICANN and Human Rights, which I happen to chair. But I am a member of the NCUC and the ALAC. I was looking at the cookbook model and specifically provisions for notice, and it seemed like they were quite broad about the purpose of data use and then how to access or rectify data. And when I saw the flowchart on the screen the other day, I had an idea about a potential check and balance or a potential safeguard that could be incorporated into this certification process. And that involves user notice. If users were given notice when their extended data was being requested, and then they had the potential to contest the legitimacy of the interest at hand, and then if you could envision a system for uncertifying interests that were potentially deemed as being illegitimate in the end in practice, then that could be a potential safeguard in the system. And my background is in policy, and I'm a bit of a fixer, so I realized that this might not be legally valid in all situations, but it was just an idea that occurred to me, so I'd like to hear your response.
I'm Swedish, so I never answer any questions before I had the opportunity to think through it. Could I ask you very humbly, could you write this, what you said, down and send it to us, and we will look into it? And thank you very much. But this is the thing, that we don't know the answers to all the questions. We are sort of not in a negotiation. We are in unknown territory and trying to, with the help of the community and legal advisors, and also the interest, the different incidents, the different groups, trying to figure out a middle way to go forward as the cookbook. All IDs are good. And now JJ is going to correct me somewhere, probably.
No, I think that was spot on. And gdpr@icann.org is the address that I didn't know earlier when you want to submit comments on any of these issues. gdpr@icann.org.
Two.
Steve Del Bianco with the business constituency, and this is in reference to the cannoli model that Susan Kawaguchi discussed earlier. It's been posted, I can't find it on the ICANN site, so we posted it at the business constituency site. It's at bizconst.org/accreditation, bizconst.org/accreditation. And my question with respect to that cannoli or this accreditation is, Would we expect ICANN to forward that over to the DPAs as the cannoli dessert to the calzone? Or is ICANN thinking that you'll collect multiple ideas for an accreditation model, try to pick one through your convergence process, and then send that dessert over? And I don't know that we have time for that kind of a process. And the companies in the BC and the IPC that put it forward are fully intending to begin to flesh it out as fast as we can. So I don't think we can replicate the process from January and February where you collect, converge, select, and send. We may have to move more quickly, and I'd ask you, what are your considerations as to moving if there are multiple flavors of accreditation models that come your way?
If your question is well, are we going to take this and give it to the DPAs, the answer is yes.
And I think to the second part of your question, so one of the things that's really important to realize is we're sharing all of the information that we have. We're making our site available. We're encouraging DPAs and anybody interested in this to come and look at it and make inputs. And we don't have a design process yet. We didn't have your model yesterday. So we're going to
look. I told you it was coming.
Exactly. And we're going to look at what does come in, and we're going to look at how we can apply that very quickly and try to come to some conclusion. I don't like the word convergence because I don't think that's what this really is. It's really looking at the details of these things and trying to make the best selection.
And what's key is to understand, we are trying to, like you, figure out this process as we go along. This is not a replicatable bottom-up bylaws-driven process. So we watched what happened with multiple models and how one was selected and sent over. And we're asking really whether you're anticipating doing something similar to that with respect to the accreditation process. Or if things are simply passed through as a conduit to the DPAs, that's understandable too. We just look to understand what you have in mind for the next step.
So two comments. One of them, I've said in public and private conversations to all of you, if the community agrees on certain models, I will take that to the DPAs. I've said that many times, and the interesting thing is that you've done that when it comes to the tiered access model or the layered model, which in my name is the same. And because we agreed as a community, also with guidance of the DPAs, thank you very much for that. I also know, and I have a great respect for the regulatory authorities within Europe, that they are going to look at our website, your website, whatever website, and they're going to collect that information as well. But we will make sure that it comes through us as well. We have a shortage of time, as we all know that, and there are some fundamental questions to address that leads to different accreditation models. So we will do what is necessary to make sure that this information leads as well. But I bet that if we have read it, they have read it. I can almost promise you that, because That's what I would have done if I was a regulator in Europe. I have the greatest respect for their important work they're doing right now. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks very much. I have two people in line in one, next, then five, then two. We will run over enough to take these questions, but I think we'll close the queue at this point. So let's go with everybody in line at one.
Thank you guys very much for pulling this session together and adding it to the schedule. It's helpful to have this discussion. Bjorn, I want to go back to a vein that you started to go down. We do, in fact, operate under contracts. I know because you enforce them via compliance actions. And that moves into a very practical concern that I have as a registry operator. There's been a lot of promise of the data protection agreements and amendments that we will have to enforce and operationalize these models. I'm very concerned that we're running out of time to review those. There's a lot of steps. I personally will have to do internal review, external counsel review, two board approvals, and then I have to incorporate those into my RRAs and have 700 registrars sign those. So some timing and some very practical next steps on that would be very appreciated as we discuss the models and move forward. Thanks.
That was Beth, I think, right? We understand the difficulty of the process, and we're facing the same thing in many ways because we also have a challenge of this timeline. And part of the reason that we're trying to take a clear plan of action to the DPAs is to be able to approach this in a way to explain that the accreditation model and the different aspects of this may take time in order to get right. And we're trying to, at the same time, preserve the uses of existing WHOIS while we have time to build out the accreditation plan and those different elements of it. And on the data processing agreements and other pieces that you mentioned, we look forward to working with you, and any input that you can provide or any guidance that you can provide us, we're certainly open and willing to look at that. I can't tell you tomorrow we're going to have a data processing agreement for you to read because we don't at this moment know exactly what that model will look like that we'll be trying to apply. But we are, in fact, letting the DPAs know that we're trying to approach this on a community basis with a clear plan of attack, with a clear plan of action, with 1,000 registry contracts, 1,000 registrar contracts. The complexity of that and the complexity of getting the accreditation model in place is something that we will be asking for forbearance on, having compliance brought against us and you as we go through these processes.
Can I ask one quick follow-up? Is it okay if I ask one quick follow-up? Thank you very much. I don't want to read anything into and make assumptions into your comments, so I just wanted to follow up quickly. Are you saying that you don't anticipate having a data processing agreement or text that contracted parties can?
No, start? I said tomorrow.
Well, you did mention that you are kind of softening up the DPAs with warnings that yes, we're working on it, and I think that's a valid approach. We are certainly working on it, and it's important to have a plan of action in place. But does that plan of action include delaying providing us with those agreements? Because as people who are also bound by the GDPR, we are going to need to have those in place for our own risk mitigation.
I think the answer to that is the agreements are probably going to be easier to put in place, but they turn a little bit on getting the models right, so they're interrelated. We have another question in one.
Alan Woods from Donuts Registry. This feeds in quite to what Beth has been talking about, and I'm a little bit puzzled by the reaction to Jim Prendergast's question with regards to data controller. Were you saying, and please clarify this for me, are you saying that you're not a data controller because you don't actually have data and hold data? Because the data controller does not necessarily need to hold the data. They just need to direct the use of the data. In fact, under GDPR, it does say that it is the natural or legal person, public authority.
Oh, you don't have to read that.
Are you sure? Because
yes, I'm very sure, and I can answer your question if you'd like.
Well, no, this is the lead up to the question. One of the fundamental things that Beth is talking about then under Article 26.1 is that we need to, as joint controllers, have a delineation of our position as a data controller. And we are not in a position to put that into a very basic privacy policy for all our registrants if we do not know where our controllerships are ending. So could you please provide the data that we need to identify who the data controllers are, in what areas, what are the liability between the data controllers, and also can we have that before the 25th of May, in fact far in advance, because there's many different models of many different registries, many boards, many legal departments that will have to vet all these before that. We shouldn't be at this point so close to the 25th of May.
We can't determine what type of data controller you are, but we can certainly indicate that we are a data controller. The question that was specifically asked was, are you a specific type of data controller? And I wasn't agreeing with the premise that we were that type of data controller. We can provide legal memorandum on this if it's useful, but we're certainly not in a position to tell you what kind of data controller you are. You may have different uses of the collection with that data that you collected than we will. And so what I was trying to do in that explanation earlier was explain, here's how ICANN will use that data. We'll be very clear about that, and we will take responsibility for the uses and the control of that data by ICANN. What we can't do is say that we'll be responsible for each and every registry and registrar's use of the data that they collect and how they use it. So that's really what I was trying to differentiate, and we can provide more information about that if useful.
Going back to 5 and then 2.
Good morning. This is Brian Winterfelt from the IPC. I want to thank Joran, Becky, and JJ for giving us more time on our favorite topic for this meeting, GDPR. Obviously, the IPC is very concerned about our ability to do our jobs to protect intellectual property rights, but also for cybersecurity work and for law enforcement to continue what they're doing. The interim model has been published, and we are working on trying to put an accreditation proposal together, and I applaud the work that was done by private members to put forward the proposal late last night that's being circulated and looked at. I'm wondering if there's some way ICANN.org could help put together some type of structure so that we could potentially put together an IRT-type group or something similar to try and make sure we can put an accreditation model together that has buy-in from the community in the very tight time frame that we have left before May 25th, so that we don't have a model rollout without an accreditation proposal in place. As we know, the model allows very little data to be public, so the ability to get access to that data is critical.
Thank you, Brian. We had this discussion yesterday. I don't think there is anyone. There's no point in time I ever said no to when community members comes together and talk about specific things, including this. So I should now offer you, I was supposed to offer you, we set up Adobe, but I really can't do that right now. But we will, of course, help you to convene to have that, and we're really appreciative of leaning over the fence or aisle or whatever it is for you to work together. It's very, very helpful. Thank you very much. And be practical then. I will ask David Olive and his support team to reach out to you and also make sure that other sides of the community can come into the same discussion. And we have to do it in the way that we are really good at doing it in ICANN. We try to work together. Also, with the only small fact, we have to be extremely transparent. So anything that is done or said, it has to be publicized for anyone to react on. I think, but that's something that we all agree on. But if you want to start working on this, or you already start, tell me how we can support you, and we will of course do that. And if I sound a little bit grumpy, it's because it's morning on a Wednesday, but I'm really, really, we are. You could see that on JJ and myself, how cheerfully happy we are with the fact that you're doing this for us.
From 2.
Okay, thanks. Amadeu Abril, Core Association, Registry and Registry Operator. Not to repeat other questions that have been done here, let's imagine that the Calzone model, the interim model, goes ahead. Three practical considerations regarding its implementation. The first one, regarding the organization name. The only way to describe that, this is a very nice mess. The opinions regarding what to do with it is impossible to fix. I am on the optimistic side that with sometimes we can reach a certain level of, you know, discrimination, what really should be there. We had the same experience when .cat moved to a privacy whois with opt-in. It took 1 year forever, or more than 1 year, for most of individuals to understand that, you know, the renewal notices, the whois reminder notices, registries notices, registrar notices. So at very least, please, at very least, allow some time before doing that a mandatory publication field, because today, any May 25 is still a complete mess. It's unmanageable. Second one, in the same area, the famous opt-in for full display. Maybe a good idea. And, for instance, our registry core has an opt-out precisely for the .cat whois. Now, that's a registry proprietary extension. And I cannot imagine a registrar being able to implement dozens and dozens of registry proprietary extensions for 500 domains to May 25 or even 6 months later. So we don't gain anything by making that mandatory today. Please, let's start work on a EPP extension in the ITF. When we have a draft, we made that mandatory at that moment, but not before. We will save time at the end. The third one regarding this also is the question of the anonymized email or web form. There are split views. Let's take that. Let's make one of the two mandatory, but let's not dictate that. We are clearly in favor of the web form and not the anonymized email, but we will not discuss that here. For the things that there is no clear consensus, there's consensus, there's a need to contact. Let's offer different methods, provided that they all agree. Now, the wild card here. I would like talking about the scope, but we will not have time. Let me say that we have at least two or three registries that have no registrants, no registrars in the European economic area. And for them, at least, they should have the option to see whether they come here. So probably default for the new model is acceptable, provided that for some of them, especially as we don't know how this will work in detail, they could still opt out if really there is no reason to apply that, and is something that doesn't fit in the legal regime. Finally, the real important thing, access and the certification models. I won't comment on the models that have been prepared and circulated because I had no time to read them, frankly. In my view, certification is not important. The critical thing, the real critical thing is what kind of access have the certified parties. And let me say that clear experiences here. You have .cat, okay, 100,000 domains, that's small, but there are many, most new GTLDs are smaller. You have .fr, 3 million domain names, how many GTLDs are bigger than that? You have .ca, you have .uk, that have some individual request models that work to general lack of complaints. You may tell me they are special, but what's special, these ones or the ones that would not be able to cope that? Let's not always design our rules for what I would call the players that are neutral or favorable to creating externalities. Many parties have shown they are really willing, able, and responsible to take upon themselves giving adequate access to the parties that need adequate access. Thanks.
Thank you for those comments, and we'll make sure those are taken into consideration.
And obviously the experience that those people who are operating in the EU now have is incredibly important to inform this process. Thank you all for joining us this morning. I guess we could probably discuss this for another 5 hours, and we may well do that in the next 2 days, but we're going to bring this session to a close. Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you, everybody.